You're listening to Terry Telford from TheBusinessProfessional.com. This audio is copyright by Bridgeport Communications and The Business Professional. All the material you're about to hear is for informational purposes only. The results you hear are not a guarantee. Any results you achieve are based on your own individual efforts. Now, we're lucky to have Mark Goldman from GoldBar.net on the call today. Mark is a joint venture expert, and he's going to tell us exactly how to work a successful joint venture. So I'd like to start off by saying thanks very much for being on the call, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Terry. I'm excited to be here today and share information with your listeners.
Thank you so much. I think the first thing we can do is just maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself, your background and whatnot.
Sure thing. I'm 32 years old and born and raised in New York. And one thing that I think people might find interesting, maybe I'm wrong because I've been known to be wrong before, believe it or not, is that I was never really interested in business growing up. My father is a deal maker extraordinaire. He's in the commercial finance business. And as a rebellious young teenager, as many teenagers are, I was more interested in doing everything possible to avoid being in business and to avoid being in the corporate world.
Wow.
I majored in psychology and philosophy in college. And I have both of those on my resume, and I ended up working in the psych field for a while and decided that it really wasn't for me, and I kind of steered myself towards computers, knowing that I was getting dangerously close to the business world, but thinking that in my still rebellious 20s that I could, you know, stay clear of that. But in college, I had met my future wife, Terry, who works with me in the business and is a full partner in the business. And while we were dating, we talked many times about working together. And we realized that the only way we'd be able to do that is either if we both majored in psychology, so either if we opened up a practice together and both of us decided we weren't interested in psychology after a while, after we both got degrees in it, and or to start a business. So I had to kind of shift this model that I'd had for 20 years and start thinking about business. And so we kind of got interested in the mail order business, and like many people who too are interested in starting, we tried a bunch of different things. We lost money. We invented a toy and lost $15,000. We tried many different things, and finally we hit on something that worked, and that was selling a book through direct mail. And this was a particular book and book distributorship program that we had gotten a hold of, and we were fairly successful selling it offline, and that was how we started our business, which is different from a lot of people online. You know, a lot of people just jump right in and get into the online world. We actually sold the product through two-step advertising, which is where you place an ad, and somebody calls up who's interested. They raise their hand, and they say, send me more information, and what you send them in return is a sales letter. And we were really kind of successful with this model. But the costs of direct mail are very high. They're dropping now, and it's something that we have in combination with our online marketing mix now. But then it was something that was really cost prohibitive. And at that time, we both had to have full-time jobs to run this part-time, and we hadn't yet realized our dreams. So we decided to get into online marketing where we thought the cost would be pretty low. And that was around 1995. And we studied, and then in 1995 was like really the infancy of online marketing. There weren't very many people online. There certainly weren't very many people teaching about online marketing. Corey Rudel and Mike Enlow were some of the first ones to ever really speak about it. Although there had been people marketing since the 80s using CompuServe and AOL and BBSs, there really wasn't anybody who had compiled that information and taught you how to do it. And, of course, the Internet changes at such a rapid pace, as you know, that it just what was out there was just kind of like this spray-and-pray marketing idea.
Right,
yeah. And so we used to try everything. We tried to get listed high in the search engines. We tried FFAs, classified ads, press releases, everything under the sun. And we finally settled on about 5 to 10 different things that worked, including writing articles and search engines and a couple of other things. At that time, you could submit to free classifieds and pay like $10 for an AOL classified, and it would do fairly well.
So
we would do things like that, and we'll talk about this a little later in the interview, but it wasn't until much later on that we realized that joint ventures were really the most powerful marketing technique that we could use, and that was the one we decided to focus on. And I'd really like to share some things with your listeners later on about focusing on just one marketing technique.
Right, as opposed to several different things.
As opposed to spray and pray, as I talked about earlier. Does that pretty much cover my background?
Enough? Yeah, I think that's really good. I mean, you have experience both online and offline, which a lot of successful marketers, for the people that are out there listening to different interviews here and there, a lot of successful marketers share a similar background to you where they do actually have offline experience and come online and make it work as well.
I think real-world experience is critical.
Absolutely.
Whether it be, you know, in a corporate environment or in being able to say I actually sold something through the mail or I sold something online that had nothing to do with marketing.
Yeah.
There's so much hype and so much noise right now from people who only got on and read Corey Rudel's book, Marlon Sanders, information from people, and then decided that they would repackage it or that they became an instant expert from theory. And I compare it, it's very similar to people who teach marketing in college and the only experience that they have in marketing is what they learned in a book or what they wrote their thesis on.
Exactly.
And marketing, as you know, Terry, is very different. It's real world. It's actually getting out there and sell. You can have the crappiest product in the world, and if the marketing's hot, you're going to make a fortune.
Exactly. Microsoft, for example.
Agreed. You know, a lot of people think Bill Gates is a genius software guy. He's really not. He's a genius marketer.
Exactly.
Same thing with Donald Trump. And the same thing with Branson and quite a few other people. They might have a good, and having a good product and good marketing is just a killer combination. I want to add that in as well.
Exactly. So how did you end up transitioning then from offline to online? Was it kind of an instant, geez, I got to go check out the internet and suddenly, yeah, this is it? Or did
it was a kind of combination of that. We were doing this offline marketing. As I said, we were fairly successful. But, you know, looking at the profits, they weren't enough to justify continuing the two-step marketing. But it wasn't also enough. There wasn't an instant where we said, oh, the internet is going to be the be-all and end-all. It's our nirvana. So we kind of were still dabbling in offline marketing while we were learning about online marketing, about registering a domain name, and everything that goes along with it.
Right.
So we were kind of transitioning, and one thing that we noticed when we were online is that there was a lot of competition of people selling the same exact book distributorship.
Right.
And this is an interesting point. A lot of people call me, and they say, I own reseller rights to a product, or I license the product from X person or Y person, and there's a lot of competition, so I don't think this is going to make money for me. And I find that to be laughable because if you look at it, it's really an opportunity. First of all, a lot of competition, too much competition is bad, but a lot of competition means that something's selling. So therefore, it's probably a good place to wedge yourself in there and make some money. I wouldn't put all your eggs in that basket, but it's certainly a good place to get your feet wet.
Right.
And what we decided was that to differentiate ourselves, number one, everyone was using the stock sales letter that the company who sold this course was providing that.
Uh-huh.
So we decided, okay, one of the best things that we can do is write our own copy.
Right.
And we started to study some copywriting, bought Dan Kennedy's Ultimate Sales Letter and a couple of other good books out there and began to dabble in writing our own copy for the course. That was number one. And number two was we decided to offer different bonuses from everyone else. So, again, positioning ourselves to be, yes, we're selling the same product, but here's what we're offering differently. And we also offered, like, different upsells and packages. For instance, we realized that our copy was selling, so we said, okay, if you buy this from us, we'll license you this same sales letter, and you won't have to use the stock sales letter that's recycled.
Right.
And people liked that, so they bought from us as opposed to the competition. And we actually, the funny thing is the competition was selling it for less than us. They were selling this product for $48, and we were selling it for $97. But it was because we differentiated ourselves and because we offered different bonuses that we were able to stand out in the marketplace.
So you really created yourself a niche within a highly populated area.
Exactly. And I hear a lot of people saying, don't get into online marketing, don't get into online marketing. I would probably advise it against it if you haven't sold something that has nothing to do with online marketing.
Yeah.
However, if you have sold something and you've been successful, you're doing something different or you're doing something unique, then sure, there is a way to tell people about it, but I wouldn't make it the focus of your business.
Right.
But as you said, Terry, we did kind of come up with our own little niche in this crowded, overpopulated market, and our word was getting out there. And one interesting thing that we noticed, and this is this leads into how we transitioned fully to online, is that one of our bonuses that we began to offer was more popular than the product itself. People started to ask us, when do I get that? When do I get that?
Wow.
And the bonus was a directory that we had compiled of lots of marketing resources. At that time, there was nothing like this.
Right.
Okay. Nowadays, this would be totally commonplace,
yeah,
and people would be giving it away for free. But around 1997, 98, nobody was doing this. So we had come up with, what would be called a golden Rolodex by some people or resources, and we thought, oh, everybody must know about this. And we found out, no, they didn't know about it, and they were truly interested. Where do I get a merchant account? Where do I find out about alternatives to merchant accounts? Where do I learn about search engines if I want to? Where do I, find out about banner advertising? At that time, these were all hot topics.
Right.
And so we compiled all this information, and we spent a lot of time. Anyone who's bought any of our products or services knows that Terry and I spent a lot of time putting together a quality product. So we spent a lot of time in this, and eventually we started noticing so many people clamoring for it that we said, okay, this product might have legs of its own.
Right.
And we separated the bonus from the product itself, and we began to sell that. We coined a name for it. We called it the Ultimate Marketer's Resource, and we began to sell it.
Uh-huh.
And it was about the 1998, beginning of 99, when we started to sell it. And eventually, within that time period, within about 3 months of being successful with this, we discovered that we started to have a lot of competition putting out similar sites and people putting this thing out for free.
Right.
But we were one of the first marketing-related members-only sites at that time. There was Warriors and a couple of maybe one or two others, but there wasn't the glut of members-only sites that there is now as well.
Right.
So, again, we began to think about how to differentiate ourselves, and we decided that what people really want is not just the resources. They want the tools themselves. The tools, at that time, if someone wanted to ask about an autoresponder, we had about 10 different autoresponders we were recommending.
Uh-huh.
And of course, we would take a back end commission if someone signed up. I don't apologize for this at all. I had at that time, people would say, "Oh, you're double dipping," but I think that a good marketing strategy always involves a back end, whether it be making an affiliate commission from someone else or setting up a joint venture with another person. So we would recommend about 10 different companies and get a commission. But we decided that even those services. We must have burned through our 5 different list servers and autoresponders in a half a year. So we realized there was a lot lacking. Why not create our own? And that's how we created the service. And nowadays, in 2004, late 2004, the Ultimate Marketer's Resource no longer contains a directory of resources. It's now a suite of custom-built tools, and I have 10 staff members that are my support and development team that work this full-time.
Beautiful. So this was, when you first started then, this was back in your spray and pray era.
Yeah, when we began, it was more in the spray and pray. And if you're interested, I could tell you about some of the things we used to do for spray and pray marketing.
Absolutely, because that's still the majority, I would say, of people trying to market anything are still using a spray and pray approach. So I think it would be very interesting to hear how you had done that.
Sure. Well, the first thing that I used to do was submit to search engines. At that time, Google didn't even exist. It was somewhere planted in the seeds of two future billionaires who were probably playing hacky sack in a courtyard of some university.
Yep.
In California. So there was Yahoo, which was a directory, and there were about 10 search engines. I think only 4 of them exist to this day, but they were big then. And at that time, you had to try to get listed high in them. And this particular book, distributorship we were selling, we got really lucky. I don't know how it happened, but studying keywords, studying all these articles that I had linked to in my directory, we came up with meta tags, and at that time, they worked to get you listed high. And I think in Alta Vista, we were coming up number one for make money online or...
Oh, wow.
Make money now. Something that was getting a lot of hits.
Yeah.
It was getting us a lot of visibility. And I would say 65% of our money was coming through that Alta Vista number one ranking. And it was good. I mean, it was bringing in a couple thousand dollars a week at that time, which was, very good. And for us, it was, helping us to, consider getting rid. At that time, I was, working in the computer field for 4 years, full time, and I had worked myself up to where I was making six figures a year. So this was enough to say, hey, I can consider quitting this if this continues.
Right, yeah.
And so that was one of our techniques, was just submitting to every search engine we could find. And then we would pay for an AOL classified ad, and I think at that time it was $12, and you could pick a category that you want, and it would run for maybe 2 weeks. And during that time, oh my God, AOL, I think AOL still is text only for the classified ads.
Uh-huh.
So a hyperlink would not even appear as HTML in their classified ads. So we used to spend, it was almost like two steps advertising still. We would get all these AOL people who would write to us an email and say, hey, I'm really interested, send me more information.
Wow.
So we used to just, you know, copy and paste our whole sales letter and send it in an email to these same, to these people, and they would order. So, but these things were working,
yeah,
but they weren't working as well as we would have hoped. And I contacted a talented programmer named Paul Galloway, who had one of the first pieces of affiliate software at the time,
uh-huh,
called YOAP, Yope. It was Your Own Affiliate Program, I think it was called. And I had him install this and integrate it with my members-only site when we kind of sprung that off from the distributorship. And I began to run a private affiliate program, which a lot of, I actually experienced flack from one person at the time who said, this is illegal, you can't close off your affiliate program to the public. Which is, don't ever let anyone tell you that. What you can't do is you can't tell people that they're paying to become a distributor.
Right.
Yep. And paying only. But you can certainly, you know, I believe that the best salespeople for your products and services are those who use them already, or those who really truly believe in what you sell. And so our happy customers became some of our best affiliates.
Fantastic.
And that became an important part of our business model. I remember one day in 1999 when I started seeing all these sales coming through, and I didn't know what had happened. And I asked the affiliate who did it, and she's like, I have no idea. I sent an article in to Internet Day, which at that time was a really popular publication. Internet Day used to go out to about 100,000 people. It was a big name. It was published by, I think it was Ziff Davis or one of these big computer companies. And when they would publish an article, it would go out with your picture and HTML, and it was a really big thing then. And she got like 35, 40 sales in one day.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, this is great. This is the big time. But the big time kind of trickled out after 2 days, and Internet Day didn't want to publish another article about our service or from her about our service. So, you know, again, you have to keep finding something else that was going to work.
Right.
So that's the problem with spray and pray marketing and spray and pray choosing all these different techniques that you got to focus on, is they're never guaranteed to produce a stable and predictable income, which is a dangerous road to walk, and I feel it's a road that a lot of people walk on.
So you end up actually having to continually find somewhere new to kind of smooth out the ups and downs of the business.
Absolutely. Or you can never leave your day job, because you can never say, this is going to pay my rent next month.
Right.
This is going to pay my car payment. This is going to pay. This is going to get me a house. This is going to do, you know, meet your goals, whatever those might be. So I knew that something had to change. And in 1998, I had first studied joint ventures.
Uh-huh.
Well, I should back up a little bit. I had been reading about joint ventures since I first got online, and at that time it was put on a lofty, mysterious platform, which I think it still is a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And guys like Mike Enlow and Jay Abraham were the names talking about joint ventures, and Ted Thomas as well. But these three people seemed to hold a mystical key that no one else could grab a hold of. I know that people paid them $25,000 to come to their seminars. I knew all these things. I just didn't think that it was possible. And one day I got an email. I think it was from Mike Enlow, and or from someone who worked for Mike Enlow, who said, you know, you can consult with Mike for 1 hour for $500.
Right.
And at that time, I said, that's insane. Who would do that? But then Terry and I talked about it, and we said, all right, this is the man who possibly holds the key to unlocking the power of joint ventures when he talks about to us. So let's pay for it.
Yep.
So we shelled out $500, and we scheduled a call with Mike. And I tell you, Terry, that was the best $500 I spent at the time.
fantastic. Maybe before we just go on, can you explain what is a joint venture for anybody that's not really
sure.
familiar with what it is?
Yeah, a joint venture in its simplest terms is a partnership. It involves two or more parties, and it could be individuals and it could be businesses, partnering up and sharing resources and leveraging off of each other's strengths and weaknesses to bring more money in that didn't exist before. And I'll simplify it. If in its simplest terms, what everyone thinks a joint venture is I have a product, I contact Terry, and I say, Terry, would you send this product out to your list, and I'll pay you 50% or 60% or 70% of the profits that come in from this from your endorsement mailing of my product. And that's been bastardized on the internet, I have to say. That's been beaten to death. And I want people to get a broader scope of joint ventures than just you mail out my product and I'll give you a piece of the profits. You join my affiliate program and I'll give you more than I pay my regular affiliates. I have joint ventures where, let's say, I have the technical resources and someone has a great idea.
So
they'll come to me with that great idea and say, I'll give you this idea, I just don't have the resources, the funding, whatever, to produce this product, and you do. Can you do that? And I'll enter into a joint venture like that where somebody's providing me this, and I'll say to them, okay, fine, I'll give you the technical resources, I'll pay for everything, but what I want you to do, I don't have the slightest bit of time to be in charge of this. I want you to work with my programming team directly, and I want you to guide them and tell them what you want done. I want you to find the copywriter or to write the copy yourself, so that this sells to people and that we know the target market. I want you to have a list of potential partners lined up that we can speak to sell this. So we'll divide up the work in order to split the profits later on.
Beautiful.
So it's a partnership in its simplest terms.
So do you do joint ventures online and offline?
I do, yes. I think that online joint ventures, as I said, they are being bastardized in the marketing industry, as many things, unfortunately, do get. And I have a different take on that than most people. Most people say, oh, this is horrible. Get out of the industry. Find a niche.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily agree with that. If you're in marketing already, or, as I said earlier, if you've done something unique, marketing a product other than how to make money on the Internet, then I think that joint ventures, you could make a ton of money just working online. But there's a whole world of people out there that have not even gotten on the Internet yet or aren't technically proficient enough on the Internet yet, whose lists number in the thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, hang on there everywhere and salivate, and you could do a successful joint venture with them.
So these would be lists that are actually postal mail, snail mail.
Postal mail, snail mail, fax. Some people have them couriered. Some, you know, fax newsletters still exist, and it's amazing the number of people that their minds are not open to this. But I think now is the perfect time to talk about it, because with email filtering, with half your mail not getting through, with ISPs blocking you for using a word that you know. Last night I was about to send something out, and it had the word opportunity in it. It wasn't about business opportunity, it just had the word opportunity.
Yep.
And Terry and I are sitting there going through the dictionary, and, you know, we have the Oxford Dictionary with six different terms that just don't have the power of opportunity.
Right.
So, but, you know, as a copywriter, I know that that will flow better than chance or you know, whatever options they were giving me at the time. So, unfortunately, with those filtering systems in effect, now is a perfect time to go after joint venture partners who mail an offer to their list or fax an offer to their list.
So is it easier, then, to do a joint venture online, or would it be easier to find one of these people offline?
I think it's easier to start online. I think that that's a good way to get your feet wet. If you've never done a joint venture before, it's good to, it's real easy for somebody to load up a pre-written endorsement letter into their email software and send it out, even if it only gets read by 35% of their list because of filtering.
Yeah.
It's much easier to get out there. And so one thing that, you know, let me back up a little bit. When doing a joint venture, you really want to make it as easy as possible for your partners. I like to make it so easy that it's almost impossible to refuse. I get refused a lot, so don't get me wrong, but I want to make it as hard as possible for them to refuse me. Listen, I know you're busy. I'm busy too. Here's what I've done. I've had a copyright. I've paid a copywriter. I wrote the copy myself. We've come up with this thing. We've studied your letters. We've written it in what we think is your voice. You could certainly change it if you don't think so, because just so you people know, when a joint venture endorsement goes out, if someone can, a list member who's used to a certain style of writing can certainly tell if that style of writing has changed.
Exactly.
If you write on an eighth grade level to your list members, and then all of a sudden I come along and I start using words like adroit and over $5 words,
yep,
to your list, they're going to know that it's not you. It's probably not going to pull as well. But if you study a person's writing style, you craft this letter for them and hand it to them and say, I've done everything for you. I've signed you up for the program, so you're going to be able to see the commissions and stats in real time. We've tested the letter, and it works really well already. All you need to do is send this to your list of people who love you. And that's a great way to get started, get your feet wet in joint ventures. I think a lot of people get intimidated because they think if they don't make $100,000 with a joint venture, that it hasn't been successful.
Right.
And that's plain BS. You know, a joint venture is successful, that's dependent on your definition of success. Are you happier with $1,000 right now? Would $5,000 a month make you happy? Would $20,000 in a month make you happy? It all depends on your definitions of success. So don't get scared and think that if you didn't make $100,000, it's not successful. Of course, that's at the point where I'm looking at it. If it doesn't make me $100,000, I'm not happy.
Right.